This is Will's Band of the Week for September 3rd, 2017. Another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett, live in studio.
Hey, Will, and hey, everybody.
On a crisp fall morning, even though it's not fall yet, but it feels that way, right?
It does, yeah. It's into September. I think we can call it fall.
Yeah. We don't have to be defined. We don't have to use the standard definitions of the seasons, right?
No. Yeah, there's like the, you know, the equinox.
Yeah.
And that's coming up. I don't know when, but later.
Yeah.
And then I guess the day after Labor Day, right? That's kind of traditionally the end of summer. Day after Labor Day, kids go back to school. That's coming up quick, too. So let's go ahead and call it fall.
Yeah, close enough. Plus, college football started last night.
That's right, here. Yeah. Got off to a slow start.
Yes, very slow.
You were at the game.
I was, yeah. It was slow, and then there was an explosion. And not literally, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they were behind 10-0 in the first half, and then they managed to just scrape it back to a tie at halftime, and then they just went nuts.
And there was like 4 minutes left in the half, and they were still losing 10-0.
Yeah, so there was like a 25-minute span where they scored like 50 points or something.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So,
so that was good.
Yeah, and it was kind of fun to see the neighborhood come alive again.
Yeah. A very, very rare Friday night Badger game.
Right.
I don't know that that's ever happened.
I don't know either. I think a lot of people were not happy about that because, you know, for us, I mean, I can literally like walk to the stadium in 10 minutes, you know, but people who are driving for an hour and a half or something, you know, it's harder to make plans for a Friday. Right. Plus, then it's a late game, so then you either have to drive back really late or stay over.
Right.
So, anyway, it worked out. It was good.
Good. And oddly enough, I was looking at the schedule here. In 2 weeks, they play another team from Utah. They played Utah State, and then they're going to play Brigham Young.
Yeah, that's right.
Which, kind of a scheduling quirk there.
That is. Two teams from Utah.
Yep.
Well, you know, it doesn't matter who you play. You just got to beat whoever gets put in front
of you. That's right. You have no control over what the other team does or who they are.
You got to control your own destiny.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You have to impose your will upon the other team.
Exactly. Right.
You have to punch him in the mouth.
Right. You know, every coach has their own cliches that become their thing, right?
Right.
So the old coach, the old timer guy that we have, who's the athletic director now, he had this phrase, don't flinch.
Who? Remember that? Flinch. I do not remember that.
And I guess flinch means what? To like hesitate or something? So
yeah. You know,
you got to be like purposeful, right? And then the coach after him, his thing was, every week we're going to go 1-0.
Oh, that's right.
Remember that 1-0 this week?
Yeah. That's so high school.
Oh, it's completely.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the same motivation, you know, in football, you know, it kind of is universal, right?
I guess so. Yeah, when I was in high school, I didn't play football. I know that might come as a surprise.
Yeah, it's very surprising, yeah.
But I was in the marching band,
uh-huh.
Which is the opposite of being a football player. And, like, when it was the fourth quarter, this is another one of those coaching things, the coach, like, had the players and, like, all the fans, like, raise their hand with their four fingers up and be like, four, because we would, you know, own the fourth quarter. And I thought that, well, that's pretty novel and pretty interesting back then. And then, you know, it's like such a cliche. So I was giving the guy credit for inventing something that he probably went to like a, you know, coaching conference somewhere and they like, mm-hmm. you know, sat in a meeting getting little ideas, you know, like, here's one you could use.
Right. Yeah.
Four. Get everybody excited about the fourth quarter. I might write that one down.
Those football coach conferences must be kind of fun, right?
Like, you go to the trade show and there's like the manufacturer of those little orange cones in one booth, like whistles.
Yeah. Right.
Let's go over and check out the whistles.
Right.
I think we need new ones this year.
And then they would have the breakout sessions for like clock management. Right. Yeah. So you go in there and it's like, okay, there's a minute 12 left in the game and you
right.
know, whatever down it is and how many timeouts you have, and you got to figure it out. You got a little clicker, right?
Right.
Who in the situation would call a timeout?
Right, right, right. Oh my God. Yeah.
It's pretty good. Yeah. Oh, and then there'd be the breakout session on closing the deal and recruiting, right? Like,
so, oh, yeah.
Like, what do you say when in this high school kid's living room to try to get him to come to your school?
Maybe you can have some role playing, right? Yeah. Okay, now, that's right. All right, you're over here. You're the mom. All right, here's your son.
Yeah.
All right, now I'm gonna come in there. Yeah.
Uh huh.
Be funny.
Yeah. Well. Okay, so this is we're literally like clearing the rust. Well, no, it's not rust; it's just dust off of the Fourth Bedroom Studios facility here.
Because mm-hmm.
We skipped a week, which we don't do too often. But there was literally no way. In retrospect, I'm glad I didn't attempt it because just there was no way.
Well, you were.
I haven't even been
home.
You were
very busy.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy.
Cross country, international driving, even.
Right. Yes.
Wow.
Yes, I was in Portland and I was in Toronto and in some places in between. Didn't see any rock and roll shows. I did have a kind of a fun music-related experience, though. We were in Kalamazoo, Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and in Kalamazoo, they have a guitar manufacturer called Heritage Guitars, and I didn't even know about this, but at our hotel, they had this fancy-looking guitar in a like a glass case. You know, that looked really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it said Heritage Guitars tours Mondays and Wednesdays at 1:30. And we were there on a Wednesday. And so we thought, hey, might as well check this out. So Grant and I went and got this this tour. It turns out that this is was originally a Gibson factory, like the big Gibson guitar factory.
Right.
Where apparently their output was something like 500 guitars a day.
Wow.
And they had like 1,000 employees. And I'm assuming this is the heyday, like maybe in the 50s and the 60s, maybe probably the 70s too. And then the Gibson operation moved to Nashville and they closed that plant in the mid 80s.
Okay.
And so this is like, Michigan's auto industry closing. So even the guitar industry even closed. That's pretty sad, right?
That's sad.
So some former employees, I don't know if they bought the building or leased it or whatever, and started what you'd call a boutique guitar company called Heritage Guitars. And it's still going. It's a lot smaller than Gibson, obviously. They now have, I think, 48 employees, and they make like 6 a day.
Okay.
And they cost like $4,000 and more.
Wow.
But we got a tour from this guy, and he's a classic guitar guy named Ren Wall. And he loves to tell stories, you know, about the old days and stuff and his career and stuff. And his favorite one is that he delivered B.B. King's guitar.
Wow.
His special order guitar.
Huh. And, so we like drove down to Memphis and gave it to him?
He drove somewhere where B.B. King was playing, and he was like in the hallway backstage, and B.B. King saw him and like motioned to him to come and sit like toward the front of the stage, and he claims that that B.B. King kicked two people out from like really close to the stage so that he could sit there.
Uh-huh.
he felt very special.
Wow, yeah, I guess.
So that was really cool. That was fun. We talked to him for quite a while. And we didn't see any bands.
Yeah. Huh.
That's all I got.
So I'm just thinking about the math there. They used to have if you have this right, they used to have 1,000 employees and they'd make 500 a day.
Yeah.
Right? So you have each person, not literally, but making a half a guitar a day.
Right.
Now they have 48 people and they only do a handful.
Right.
Yeah, they're much less efficient.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But I guess that's the handmade versus the factory output.
You know what model. It reminded me a little bit of when I did the Louisville Slugger factory tour.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that?
No.
So you go through and they show where, you know, it starts as just like a chunk of wood, and then there's just like the most basic shape, right? So in the baseball bat example, it's just a cylinder.
Uh-huh.
And then it goes through these stages where it gets, you know, machined, but, you know, with great care, of course.
Of course.
You know, and then the lacquer gets put on, and there's all this, you know, these custom orders. And you go past in the Louisville Slugger factory, you go past the, you know, those special orders, and there's that guy's special bat waiting to be delivered or whatever.
Right.
They'll have their name on it. And in the guitar example, there's, you know, all the pieces that they use for the necks and the pieces that they use for the bodies. And then there'll be like a different guy, you know, of course, doing a different thing, but very specialized. And you wonder, and Grant was wondering, like, how they measure it so precisely, you know, yeah. Like with guitar frets and things. And with a $4,000 guitar, I was wondering, what do they do that can make a claim that it's better made than, you know, the Gibson guitar, the counterpart that, you know, like a really nice Gibson guitar, maybe that would cost $2,000 and this
right.
one would cost $4,000.
Right.
So you got to be pretty good, right, to be able to justify charging that much.
Yeah. And to your point, too, about when it's handmade, like, I don't know if it's handmade exactly, but however they make it in a more, you know, hands-on approach, yeah, getting that accuracy compared to, you know, when you can just program a machine to do it exactly the way that you specify every time.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
But
they have to.
Oh, the other thing was that there's some billionaire from Singapore who is investing in the whole block where this factory is located. And there's a whole big development planned where they're going to have a restaurant, probably a brew pub, because there's brew pubs everywhere in Kalamazoo, and I don't know, maybe retail or something. I don't know, but they're going to be investing a whole bunch into it. And Ren Wall was very excited about that.
Yeah,
so that's kind of cool.
That's cool, Kalamazoo.
Oh, and the other interesting story from Kalamazoo is there's a brew pub there called, well, there's the Bell's Brewery,
yeah.
And we went there. That was cool. There's one called the Kalamazoo Beer Exchange. And beer exchange is like stock exchange, where the prices fluctuate depending on if they sell that particular beer.
Right.
And every 15 minutes, the price changes. So like if nobody's ordered a particular tap, then the price goes down. And then every hour or two, they do a market crash, and all the prices go down for 5 minutes. All the taps are like $3.50. So it's gimmicky, but it's kind of funny.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, they did something like that for a little while at State Street Brats. They had a board with fluctuating prices based on.
Huh.
But I don't know. Maybe they got sick of explaining to people what the deal is and stuff.
Yeah, like if nobody orders the bacon and blue cheese burger, then it's like $2.50, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And if you're the cook, you're like, oh God, I got to make one of these.
Right. But then obviously a few people get it based just on the price, and then pretty soon it's. You know, it's like, what is this guy trying to corner the market on these bacon cheeseburgers?
Yeah.
Maybe they're, you know, price is going to skyrocket. So, yeah, fun. And how did the, you know, dropping the kids off emotionally must all have that, been it would, pretty
it,
tough.
Yeah, it went okay. It was kind of like we're talking about this, how it didn't feel like a vacation. My wife was commenting that this doesn't feel like a vacation. And I said, that's because it's not. It's a business trip, you know. You try to make it a vacation, but because you have all these tasks and because, you know, yeah, there's a separation with your kids. So it you're never going to get into that mode where it feels completely like, hey, we're just free and on vacation, right? So
yeah,
it had a different feel to it for sure. But I think it went okay.
Yeah.
They're both still there.
That's good.
So, yeah.
Now, the one went to Portland, but the one that was going to go to Toronto did not go to Portland, right?
Correct.
Okay. He just waited back here.
Right.
Okay. And then then your wife flew out to Toronto with him.
I drove to Toronto with him.
Oh.
And then she flew to meet us in Toronto and then drove back.
Okay, I knew there was a plane in there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of a whole, like, crazy thing.
Mm-hmm. So is he living in Anurag's basement now? In Kitchener?
That's his goal. I mean, that's he's hoping to get to that point.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be, like, that would be probably the biggest sign of success you could ever reach, right? If you could be living in Anurag's basement.
Right.
I'm sure it's a nice basement.
I haven't seen it, but... No, yeah. I was imagining, and when I'm talking about it, a really nice place, like with a shower and a, you know, a bathroom and a shower in the basement, so you don't have to go upstairs. It's like a little apartment.
Right, yeah.
A little in-law unit down there. Yeah. So,
yep, didn't get to see Anurag on this trip. He was too busy. We almost connected, but he had a meeting downtown, like just as we were leaving downtown. So,
yeah,
it didn't happen.
Oh, well, you'll have plenty of chances now that you've got a son up in Toronto.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to two questions. Okay, so now you got kids at two different colleges. Did you buy like t-shirts from these new colleges?
I did buy one. Mm-hmm. Yes. The other one didn't have any.
They didn't have any?
No.
Oh, the one in Portland is a small school.
Yeah, it's got 400 students or something.
Okay.
So, but they're an art school. They probably make different shirts at different times.
That's true. You'll just have to wait a little bit.
Yeah, they didn't have like a organized marketing. And of course, in the school in Toronto, it's called Ryerson, and they've got like, they're a pretty big school. So they have sports teams and stuff. So they're called the Ryerson Rams.
Oh, okay.
So I have a Ryerson Rams shirt.
Do Canadian colleges have football teams?
Like
they must.
Canadian football? God, I don't even know.
Do they play on that like 110-yard field with like...
Yeah, they have basketball and hockey. I don't know. Yeah, and my son doesn't care about sports, so... and I didn't really check into the details.
I'll check that out during that.
Yeah. Check out the Ryerson Rams and see what they're up to.
So that t-shirt thing was just a segue to talk about what you're wearing right now.
Yes. A new sports affiliation.
Yep.
Craig recommended this team, by the way. He said, maybe I should try this because my team got relegated last year,
mm-hmm.
Sunderland. So yeah, now we're officially, I guess I am officially sponsoring Brighton and Hove Albion.
Yep. Yeah, he's got a nice t-shirt there, Brighton and Hove Albion, the Seagulls. It's a simple, clean logo they've got there.
And in three games, they've played one that they didn't lose.
That's not bad.
Yeah, so not losing is a good thing, right? That's what you should endeavor to do.
That's the number one goal.
Wouldn't it be great if there was a...
Well, you can't play not to lose, as we all know.
That's a good point.
Not to lose, because then you will lose.
Yeah, good point. I think it would be great if a team was so average that they tied every one of their games. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be good.
Would it be 0-40-0 would be their record? Or is it 38?
38, because you don't play yourself twice, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it right to call it, do they call it a tie or a draw?
A draw.
Yeah.
I can't get, I'm not comfortable using term, I won't say like the pitch, I'll say the field. I won't call it a match, I call it a game.
Yeah, you can't get out of your...
It sounds pretentious and weird to say that, you know, like...
How about the table? Can you call it the table rather than the standings?
I have nothing against, you know, if you're going to get into something from a foreign country to adapt, you know, different ways of describing things or what, I don't know what I'm saying, but I just, you know... Chris and I have been to the bar here a couple times and watched Tottenham play, and some of the people there, the things that they'll, you know, they will use, you know, the pitch and the touch line and you know, be very careful about calling it a match instead of a game, and almost like look at you funny if you'd say call it soccer. I don't know. It just bothers me. I'm not comfortable doing that myself.
All right.
So
we'll see.
Won't catch me doing that.
Maybe you'll work your way into it, though. Like in 5 years,
I'm studiously avoiding that. I'm going to be true to myself and what's comfortable to me.
You're going to be comfortable being an American fan of English Premier League soccer and using the terms that you are comfortable with.
Right. Like if I was naming a team, I wouldn't call it, it was in Salt Lake City, I wouldn't call it Real Salt Lake because that's embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Right? Like, what's less Spanish in than Utah? Nothing.
Well, there's the Utah Jazz basketball team. Like, how much right. Jazz do they have?
Well, that used to be in New Orleans, though.
Right.
The Utah Jazz. Yeah, that's one jazzy place there. Utah. We're talking a lot about Utah today.
That's right. Yeah. It's the theme. All right. We have a lot of themes. Well, we did listen to one band. At least we had time to listen to one band.
Yes.
That's about it, though. But this is, it's September, so there's all kinds of stuff, right, coming out?
Yeah, it's going to be...
It's going to be fun. It's going to be a bombardment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there will be a couple of weeks where there will be like three big podcast favorites, and we'll have to maybe pick two of them. I mean, it's going to be almost a log jam, I think,
yeah,
with this coming month.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll, of course, have probably... For about an hour after we stop recording here, we'll have a post-production slash pre-production meeting, and we'll probably try to hash out some of these things and start the negotiations, and we'll have our agents get in touch and stuff and try to narrow it down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, do we have anything else before we start talking about actual music this week?
I don't know that anybody died that I heard about.
No, the aging rockers that
another
lived.
Another good job by all the old rockers.
Yeah.
They're all taking their heart meds and getting their exercise in.
Right. Good job.
Extending their lives. Good job. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So there's a little bit of a lead into this. About a year and a half ago in Kiki Schuler's basement, we've talked about that a little bit, right? You ever mm-hmm. been there?
No, I have not.
Yeah. So this woman in town hosts shows at her basement. And I think she can get 60 people in there. Barrett's phone was just playing a little preview. But... I think she can get 60 people in there, and it's a really cool setup for bands because it's kind of like in the round. Well, it's like two of the four borders, right? So it's like an L shape, all the seating. And then the band is right in the middle, and so it's an intimate setting.
Uh-huh.
And God, I bet she has maybe, one or two a week, maybe. And they're usually sort of... folk rockers, that are kind of, she's not going to have a metal band down there or something, or a thrash band or anything
right.
like that. But like John Langford from the Mekons, he's been down there in various incarnations.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Matt Pond, PA?
Matt Pond, PA.
Yeah, we saw him there a year or two ago. But one of the things we saw was this band called the Minus Five. That Peter Buck is in.
Yeah.
And also that band is led by this guy, Scott McCoffey. I think that's how you say his name. And those two people are in this band that we're talking about today, which is
yes.
Filthy Friends. So it's basically, I always tend to assume that Scott McCoffey is the band leader of these things, but I'm not really sure whether he is. But this involves... Of course, Peter Buck and Scott McCoffey and Corin Tucker from Slater Kinney mm-hmm. is the singer for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a couple other people that we're probably giving undue respect by not saying who they are because I can't remember.
Yeah, they don't remember. Yeah. They don't remember. They don't count is what I meant to say.
Yeah.
It's like every super group, right? You could like, these guys are the super part. You guys are just the group.
Well,
nobody cares about you.
It is funny when they say, this is a super group, and then they mention the two or three who are in famous bands, and they say, and it also features this person from this band, and it's a band that you've never heard of, and this other
right.
person from this other band that you've never heard of. But they're trying to, it seems like they're trying to give them proper credit for being part of a super group, even though
right.
their former group's not super.
Right. So, it seems kind of cruel. Like, why not just mention them all? And say, what if we were, Will and Barrett have been, and Chris have been invited to a super podcast, all these famous podcasters.
Right.
And then, and in addition to the famous podcasters, we have from Will's Band of the Week.
right.
Why go out of your way to create a special category?
Yeah, like
just
when we
name them all as part of the super group.
When we do our super podcast with the NPR guys. Let's see. And who else would it be?
It'd be like Dan Carlin from Hardcore History, right?
Okay.
You know, like stuff you missed in history class, those women. So there's your super podcast right there.
Okay, yeah. And featuring Will and Barrett from Will's Band of the Week.
Yeah.
Right?
Which, yeah. A bit like the logo that we have for this, where you're given a lot of prominence, and
right,
Chris and I are kind of in the you need a magnifying glass,
right?
To see us on there.
Their names are on there, but you probably need some kind of a special device,
right?
Magnifying glass if you're old fashioned,
right? You know, like all the designers I know, every time they're working with a client, they'll do something, and the complaint is always the same: make the logo bigger, right? That's like a, you know, but in your case, you're like, Chris and Barrett, make that smaller.
Yeah, it needs to be a little bit smaller. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I made a couple demands. He had to redo it a couple times because I told him that your name is, right. It was a little bit too easy to read.
Right.
And, if you make it smaller, it makes the point better.
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to have to buy a whole new font because this one doesn't come any smaller than that. Well, do it then. Whatever you got to do. I do not want to see their names on there. Even though they will technically be on there.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm thinking of a story related to that, but I'm not sure if it's a podcast-appropriate story. So we'll discuss that off-air. All right, Filthy Friends, they have an album called Invitation. And let's play a track and then discuss it more. Do you want to pick the first track?
Sure. I like song number 4, Any Kind of Crowd.
So either Peter Buck wrote that or somebody else wrote it and said, this sounds like REM, so Peter, play this.
Right. I know he's totally got a solo guitar going on in the background.
It's a total Peter Buck sound.
Yeah.
The whole album is not that way. There's maybe three or four songs where you can really, you know, notice his guitar style.
Right.
But that was a very notable one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah. This is not like something like super exceptional, really, is it?
No.
And and some of the songs, you're just kind of like, what the hell? You know, it's kind of just, I don't know, unremarkable totally. But maybe half of them are pretty solid.
Yeah.
I
totally disagree every the way you're characterizing this. It's,
and I did warm up to it after listening to it a couple more times. The first time I kind of wasn't sure like what they were even like going for. But because it does, I don't know, it has a little bit of a sort of roots rock type of sound to it in some places.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's play another one. I think this one has kind of a Peter Buck trademark guitar in it too. It's called Faded Afternoon.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you picked that as being one of the ones that's got the R.E.M. sound. It doesn't sound like an R.E.M. song, but you've got Peter Buck doing his thing there.
Yeah.
What is those? Is it like octaves? Like, dun, 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 like he's always doing that in the background of all of his songs.
Yeah.
That's like his style. That's his style.
Yep.
You know, I wonder if it just comes naturally, if he's like playing something else and then the people in the band are like, We brought you on here to do your thing, like that you always do on the R.E.M. songs.
I think he
fine.
I think he instinctively plays that way.
Yeah, you know,
he's got certain chords he likes, and he has certain like guitar picking style that he likes.
Yeah, you know, maybe you mentioned that this is kind of lackluster, and I agree. I mean, that's too harsh, but it's not lustrous, right? So it does lack some luster.
Yeah, that's good.
Maybe just the nature of the supergroup, right? So you've got Corin Tucker, Scott McAuliffe?
Yeah.
Okay, and Peter Buck. Like, if Peter Buck has an idea, you know, somebody like Mike Mills, when he was in R.E.M., would be a lot more apt to be like, that sucks, than Corin Tucker would, you know? You're going to be deferential for everybody's ideas. Like, that's a great idea. I like that idea, you know? You're going to be tread a lot more carefully.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it probably would be different, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Like, of course, if you and I, if we were doing our podcast supergroup, and if Bob Boylan said something and we didn't like it, we'd tell him, that is a terrible idea, Bob. Don't even bring that up.
Yeah.
Right? Because we wouldn't be afraid. But,
not at all. But
these people in
musicians
the band
are different.
Yeah. With Peter Buck, you're going to be just kind of like, oh.
Yeah. But we'd tell him what's what.
Yeah.
Bob Boylan.
Well, some of the...
Why are you famous?
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Right.
We don't need you.
You just got lucky because, well, you could say that to Peter Buck, you know. You would be nowhere without Michael Stipe.
Yeah.
Like, you could get kicked out of the band really fast by saying that, right?
Right. Yeah. We should have invited Michael Stipe instead of you.
Yeah. Well,
Barry.
I did have a bit of a reaction listening to this in places where I would, in my mind, imagine Michael Stipe singing the song instead of Corin Tucker. And there are a few where you can actually imagine that. And they kind of sound, it makes them sound like songs on like the 12th best R.E.M. album out of 15, right? Like it wouldn't make Murmur, you know?
Right. But we're talking more like Around the Sun.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit better than, I think it's a little better than that.
But. Okay. Like, whatever.
Yeah. How about Monster? That was the one that I think you and Chris might have really hated, and I didn't hate it quite as much.
I do hate that.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to make another pick, or do you want me to?
No, I'll make another one. Hold on.
I'm going to look at the receipt that I just found in my pocket. Let's see. It's no fun. I thought it might be a memory from our trip, but it's not. All right. What's your pick?
Well, I hate we've picked number four, then number three. I'm going to pick number five. Second Life. You know, I think that one, I don't know, two things. I found myself wondering why I latched onto that song, because it's like, it's kind of, it's okay, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's what kind of what the whole thing is to me, you know, it's fine. I would not recommend that somebody go out and buy this. I don't know.
On the sound opinions scale, buy it, try it, or trash it, you're going to give it a try it. I don't think you're going to trash it, but you're not going to buy it.
No, I'm not going to trash it. Yeah.
I think that if they played in Kiki's basement, I think it would be pretty enjoyable, actually.
Sure.
It's just not something to have like super high expectations for. It's friends hanging out, right? They're not quite sex Freunde, right? Because they're not six.
No. Yeah. It's how many is it?
It might be five.
Five. Funf Freunde. Funf Freunde.
We haven't played this in a while. Here, listen. Sex Freunde! Oh, wait, that was Nicholas's drum roll coming after that.
Oh.
This is my sound effects library.
What else we got here?
Well, we got the Death of the Week, and we have the
We
have the exit music. We have the live report, thing. God, I just want to play this because we haven't heard it in a while.
Right.
This week it's just for the mood of the podcast, right?
Here's what I want to have happen in... sometime in the next year or so, play that live.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
Know?
We could do that when we do our live podcast performance.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So like that,
we'd be like, we'd have our headphones on and stuff, and it's like we have a live report. We'd all put our microphones and stuff down.
We'd walk
go
over
up and
there.
Put on the guitars.
That would
be glorious.
You and Chris could play that riff.
Oh, yeah.
Really easily. So, and I could do the drums.
Yeah.
That would be great. Okay.
Oh, here's a little extended version.
Yeah, this is... listen to this. That was a spectacular drum
fill,
wasn't it?
This is a treat for... I shouldn't be talking over this, maybe. People were enjoying hearing more of it, and I was...
Yeah, we talked over
talking
it.
Talking over it.
Sorry, but we needed to talk over it, because otherwise people would record it and then reproduce it and make millions on the internet.
That's true.
Right? You can't allow that.
No.
All right. Well, that's it.
What was that song called?
It turned into a song called I Know How to Rock. That's what it was called. I mean, imagine we were a bunch of 18-year-olds, right?
Yeah.
And my friend Dave, like, wrote this song called I Know How to Rock.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's funny.
All right. So that's all we've got this week. But we'll have more next week, right?
Yes.
I'm going to tell you about my idea for next week after we go off the air. So thanks, everybody, for listening. You know, even though everybody's being bombarded with new releases, but keep giving us ideas, because what's going to happen is everything is going to come out in September and the first week of October, and then we'll have like the rest of October and November. Like November, nothing comes out, so we need kind of a little bit of we need to build up the library a little bit.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do that. So anything else, Barrett?
I don't think so. I think we covered everything we meant to talk about.
I think we did. All right, let's talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter @willsband. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.